For 120 years, Mount Carmel College of Nursing has prepared nurses to serve our communities. Here, our students can earn their Bachelor of Science in Nursing degree and take their education all the way to a Doctor of Nursing practice with small class sizes and help every step of the way. Want to learn more? Visit mccn.edu/visit to schedule your campus visit today. That's mccn.edu/visit.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along. Coming up over the next hour, I'll chat with Amazon about the company's investment in renewable energy and ask if its climate commitments are here to stay. Plus, we'll hear about the efforts being made to tackle scam texts. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. A little bit later in the show as well, we're going to hear about the power of the .ie domain name. But I want to start this week with Amazon. We know that it's a billion-dollar company with multiple strands, from streaming and shopping to customer service and the cloud. But at the heart of all of that is data, and therefore data centers. Data centers are a vital cog in the internet machine, but with them comes a fair few concerns. Lindsay McQuaid is the Director of Energy EMEA at AWS, and she joins me now. Lindsay, thanks a million for your time. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of the data centres, can you just explain to someone who may not know or have ever thought about this side of things, but why does a company like Amazon have a role and a job title like yours?
Yeah, so great question, Jess. And I think my role is probably symptomatic of the fact that energy and electricity specifically is one of the key inputs to making our data center operations work effectively and providing service to our customers. So electrification and digitalization are probably two of the biggest trends that you're seeing coming through in terms of economic advancement and globalization and the like as well, as we all strive to understand what's going on with the growth and opportunity associated with it. And data centers are part of that. So, and energy is part of that. So my role is really to make sure that I help the business identify opportunities, identify risks, and then also help to kind of solve some of that.
We know that, you know, and I have mentioned this previously, but very often, even here on News Talk, we have discussions around data centers. And there's a lot of experts who know this area inside out, upside down and backwards. But then there's also other people who will have a vague idea of what data centers are, but may not know much more beyond that. So can you just, at a very top level, explain what a data center is, why they're needed, and then some of the concerns and opportunities from an energy point of view?
Okay, cool. So, I mean, a data center in and of itself is just really a physical location, a large, you know, a building, a location where very advanced equipment, the computing machines and related hardware, servers, data storage drives, network equipment, and all of the cabling that goes with that is stored. And it's stored in that one location so that we can then access it and use it to help us run aspects, which not, and it doesn't just help Amazon, but it helps pretty much all of our customers and right down into individual households in terms of how they live, work, travel, and just go about their daily business, because pretty much everything we do nowadays has got a data element to it. So that data, instead of just sitting to the side and not doing something with it, is being put to good use. And that digitalization actually enhances our access to more efficient processes, how we purchase goods and services, how we understand our banking, for example, how we understand our interaction with public services. You know, everyone is using data every minute of the day, regardless of what they're doing. And that's, you know, as individuals, as householders. But you've also got companies doing the very same then to create the products and services that we then all rely upon in our day-to-day. And all of that data, all of that intelligent management of that data is taking place inside data centres. So all of that, you know, web applications, the services to customers, operational management of companies and businesses across Ireland is all coming right back to data centres. And then, you know, putting... your data, and you know, historically, back in the day when computing was at, you know, the very, very early stages, these computers were behemoths. They were massive, you know, massive compute power, trying to access energy to solve, which today, by today's terms, probably would have been some pretty rudimental problems or challenges that they had. And that we've then, through time, and when I say we, it's the collective here, we've innovated and we've been able to optimise the size and scale, and we've shrunk down the amount of space that's required, and then been able to do even more smart stuff even faster. And a lot of that is then happening in data centres. Now, the data centre, possibly back in, you know, even 20 or 30 years ago, each individual business would have had probably a room behind a locked door where servers were kept, and that would have been where you would have had your data being stored and logged and there to access as and when you needed it. We were probably underutilising that data 20 or 30 years ago as well. Now, if you think about every business having those individual data centres, that was something that, you know, could create risk, could create enhanced pressure on local networks and the like. And there was an opportunity, and AWS is one of the organisations that spotted that opportunity to really look at the economy of that and look at our skill sets and understand how we could support our customers in, you know, accessing data centre capability in a much more efficient and scaled manner. So, you know, over time, we've then developed our cloud business, our global cloud infrastructure business. And the reason that our customers really come to us and work with us is that we have they don't require to run that on-premises facility any longer. Mm-hmm. We'll manage all that for them. We'll ensure that our compute power is available to them all the time, you know, with high levels of resiliency. It's secure, it's efficient, it helps them innovate faster, and that's all housed in a data centre. People call it the cloud, which sounds a little bit abstract, a bit esoteric, but the cloud is effectively a building where all the smart kit is on the inside, and all of our customers are on that, are using that apparatus to help their businesses innovate, help serve their customers, help us all have, you know, benefit from the data being used in our day-to-day lives. So, you know, it's just AWS. Obviously, we're talking about Ireland as well here. AWS is our home, if you like, in Europe, is in Dublin. It's where our first data centre was opened. And it's our third largest location globally within Amazon Web Services as well. So a really important market for us. Mm. And we've continued to enjoy and work with Ireland as we've scaled our business over the last 20 odd years.
And as you said there, it's such a vital part of everything. So whether it is a GIF you're sending your friend on WhatsApp, an email you're sending for business, the online shop you're doing, all of this data is vital. But obviously enough, and as we've covered on the station here quite a bit, there's the controversial side of the data centres because they are intense from an energy consumption point of view. And that has proved controversial, particularly when we have climate targets that we're trying to hit in this country and around the world. So how and where does the balancing of the seesaw come into the equation from AWS's point of view to not only facilitate all of the things you've just outlined, but also be aware and mindful and contributing to solutions where possible on the climate front?
Yeah. So, I mean, that sustainability point is something that, you know, is fundamental and central to how we've developed and grown our business in AWS over the years. We want to be using the electricity that we consume as efficiently as possible. We also want to be using the kit that we use, the chips and the servers that we use, as efficiently as possible. And we want to make sure that we're then able to give our customers the best service and the best price associated with all of that as well. So there's a balance there in terms of making sure that we've got access to water, we've got access to power, and that we're putting our data centres in places where they can be accommodated. Now, in Dublin, we've obviously set up our operation here, and we've scaled from that point. Ireland at that point has been going through an energy transition. We've seen the retirement of, if you like, the older style of electricity generation and a transition to renewables. And through that transition, we've recognised that as our electricity consumption to support the data centres on which we all rely is coming through. And, you know, there's figures out there saying that by 2050, we'll have doubled the amount of electricity we're all going to be using because everything's getting electrified and we're digitising everything. Mm-hmm. There's a need for us to be investing and supporting the electricity generation on which we're going to rely. And what we've been doing at Amazon is investing in renewables as part of that key plan that we've got, and you know the announcements this week in Ireland and across Europe reflect that journey that we're on of in working with energy partners, investing in renewable energy, and developing new sites, and we're making those sites happen by entering into agreements with our energy partners to then see these sites constructed and then operational, and adding capacity to the site and clean electricity to the network as well.
You referenced there the announcement this week. So just tell me a little bit about that announcement in at the wind farm in Northern Ireland.
Yeah, so we're super excited to be making an announcement. It's our wind farm in Northern Ireland at Carlacky Hill, the second that we're going to have in Northern Ireland. It's a fantastic site. We've got 11 turbines, just over 4 megawatts apiece. And that in itself is an amazing thing, because when I started in renewables back in the early 2000s, the assets we were deploying were just single megawatt turbines. Now we're four times the size at 4 megawatts. That shows how renewables have scaled up, and we're now able to deploy 11 turbines delivering 47 megawatts of clean energy to the All Island grid in Ireland. It's a fantastic project that we've been working with our partner on, ERG, and it's going to deliver £2.5 million into the Northern Irish economy, and we're going to be supporting, and we're working with them to help that contribution come into our climate pledge as well. So you'll be aware that we had a renewable energy target that we'd set ourselves originally for 2030. We then accelerated that forward to 2025. We actually delivered it in 2023 across the globe. And then we're keeping going with it because we've also established a goal looking out to 2040 to reach net zero carbon. And Carlacky is going to be one of the sites that helps us contribute to that net zero ambition at 2040, and helps us ensure that we are sustainably supporting our operations and our electricity consumption when we're running our data centres.
You mentioned there the advancements in the technology and the capability, even in the time that you've been working in this space. Are you anticipating that to grow even further? So for that 2040 goal, for example, will technology make it easier to make bigger leaps as the years go by?
I would say it's very much a partnership between the kind of electrification plans that every country's got and the digitalization plans that they've got, and actually using the cloud and using the compute and the, you know, the generative AI capability and the, you know, the very, very clever networking and hardware opportunity that there is, we can innovate faster and we can actually accelerate the transition to a cleaner electricity network, not just in Ireland but across the globe. And then, you know, using our climate pledge commitment and our climate pledge fund, we're investing in some of those technologies and trying to make things happen faster. So we want to see clean energy really being the stalwart, being where we're focused on, not just to support our operations, but also then to support our customers and to support the networks in which we rely. Because as we've shifted away from carbon intensive forms of generation, where you had to burn stuff to make electricity, we've had to see how grids have had to change. So the networks on which we all rely have had to change, because the assets that we now need to deploy, the generation assets we now need to deploy, have to be where the natural resources are available to us, whether that's onshore wind or offshore wind or solar generation, for example. And, you know, not too long ago, the idea of solar, even in Ireland, would have been something that folk would have, you know, scoffed at. But now, because of leaps in the technology and the increased deployment, Ireland's even got its own solar plants coming through, which is fantastic to see. And then very soon, hopefully, we're going to start to see offshore wind coming through in Ireland as well. It's a fantastic opportunity for Ireland to really harness some of that exceptional resource that Ireland has to then help it, to power the island and to power continued growth and prosperity for the whole economy.
And look, I suppose before I let you go, I need to ask that, you know, in the last number of weeks, we've seen big tech companies do a bit of a U-turn on some of their policies and some of their focuses, areas that they had previously said were important. Am I right in saying that this is something that Amazon is committed to? You've set those targets. I'm sort of wondering if this is something that will come to fruition, regardless of what's happening in particularly the United States at the moment.
So I think, I mean, Jess, I think that's a very wide question, and it would be difficult for me to say exactly what's going to happen. As a business, we remain agile and responsive. Pardon me, we may remain agile and responsive to what's going on in the world. But, you know, we have set our goals for 2040. We want to be net zero carbon by 2040. And that's very much our long-term view. Things change all the time, and politics and political cycles come and go all the time. But one of the things about working at Amazon is that we're willing to take a long-term view. We're willing to invest and work towards something that's long-term. That's very much the philosophy of the company. We don't react to short-term trends and short-term indications. We want to make that commitment. That's why we're bold. We've set that 2040 target. And as I say, we're continuing to work towards it. So, you know, things will change and move around about us. We'll navigate all of that. But I think it's important that we don't lose sight of some of those long-term commitments that we've committed to publicly and remain working towards day to day within the company.
Lindsay McQuaid, Director of Energy EMEA at AWS. Thanks a million for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks, Jess. Have a good day.
Yeah, look, it's great to see the investment in renewables, particularly at that scale. But I guess I've been thinking quite a bit in recent weeks about the changes in attitudes by big tech towards policies that once seemed very important to them. The one that obviously jumps out at the moment is the DEI side of things. And I guess we know that anything can happen. So I'm sure many of us will be waiting with bated breath to see what happens in terms of the climate and environmental impact side of things. But anyway, coming up next here on News Talk, we'll take a look at how Comreg is looking to tackle scam texts.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. The email address, as ever, if you want to get in touch, is techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, one of the biggest headaches for consumers and Garda Síochána and businesses is the humble scam text message. We've spoken numerous times about the devastation it can cause from a financial and reputation point of view. And the key question has always been, what, if anything, can be done? Well, on Friday of this week, Comreg, the Irish communications regulator, provided a bit of an update. Ciara O'Brien of the Irish Times is with me now to run through the detail. Ciara, what do we know?
What we're going to have is a registry for companies that handle these bulk SMS messages that go out. So the likes of, say, come from your bank or come from a delivery company. And we've all had them where they arrive in and it looks like they're from a bank or it looks like they're from your local courier. And then it turns out actually it's a scam text. And this obviously has been a huge problem. I think it's worth about 115 million euro to scammers every year. You know, this is the kind of the cost of it. This is the cost for Irish consumers. So what's going to happen now is Companies that handle these bulk SMSs will have to register the IDs with ComReg, and they'll have until there's a deadline put on this. So from the 3rd of July, anything that's not registered with ComReg will be labelled as likely spam when it's sent out. So if it arrives on your phone and that ID hasn't been registered with ComReg, it will come with a little tag that says this is likely spam. So it'll put people on their guard. And that doesn't matter whether it's a genuine company that hasn't registered its ID or it's a scammer. So people will just have to watch out for that little tag. And then from later in the year, from October, those messages are going to be blocked. So if you're not registered, those messages won't be able to be sent. So what it will do is it will protect consumers. And it's something that, you know, I think we've discussed this before. It's a simple thing that can be done to protect consumers, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are being scammed. And the scams themselves and the frauds that are being carried out through these text messages, they're getting to the point where they're so sophisticated that even genuine text messages that are coming in, you know, everybody is kind of side-eyeing them, because I do it myself. I ignored a message from the bank because I thought it was a scam text. It was only when they rang me and it was a genuine, and then even then I said, look, I'll call you back, and I rang the number that I knew, because that's the advice I would usually give to people. So this will protect consumers, but it will also protect businesses, because, you know, if you don't trust the messages that are coming from through your phone claiming to be from these companies, whether they're genuine or not, you know, what's the point in them sending them out?
If this is such a simple and effective solution, why hasn't it been done before now?
That's the age old argument. Why does it take so long to do anything? You know, I mean, like there's things that have to be done. You know, there's procedures that have to be put in place. There's agreements that have to be gotten. At the end of the day, at least it's being done now. But hopefully that when the next scam arises, as it will, because this means that, you know, when once you cut off one avenue, it's like playing whack-a-mole. You cut off one and then the next one will pop up. Hopefully the next scams that are that become this prevalent will be dealt with quicker, and that the industry will get behind it and the regulators will all work together, because there's so many moving parts, I suppose. You know, you have to get everybody on the same page. But you know, I think the important thing is it's happening now, and, you know, by the end of this year, those scam texts should be a thing of the past, because they will just be automatically blocked.
Ciara O'Brien of the Irish Times, as always, thank you so much for explaining that to us, and hopefully that is the end of the scam text message. Now, if you run a business, you'll know all about the importance of having an online presence, but is every business owner equipped to do so? And what difference does the .ie domain name make? David Curtin of .ie is with me now to discuss. David, thanks a million for joining me. Can you start off by just introducing us to the work that you do at .ie?
So we're primarily the National Domain Registry. So we look after 330,000 domain names, just .ies, on behalf of Ireland Inc., if you like. So the National Registry, but we're not just the National Registry. We do a lot of other initiatives, if you like, that are aligned with our purpose. So what we're aiming to do is to help Ireland thrive online. That means helping businesses, communities, towns, individuals to have a digital presence and to thrive online with that digital presence. Mm-hmm. So what else do we do? We run initiatives and programs that are about digital adoption. We do advocacy with government, and that's where we come across areas that highlight how government can help business, especially, to do more with digital, to be more productive, to boost their sales, to cut their costs. And then thirdly, we've just set up a data analytics unit. We call it Team Xavier, and that team has the capability now to drill down into digital data. So whether it's about .ie domains or .com domains, but we can get a profile of e-commerce, we can get a profile of the cybersecurity, so internet security, so in particular web and email security, and how well they're doing in complying with internet standards, and other data that's of interest to, let's say, representative organizations or actually to government departments. So that's us, registry, advocacy, and new data.
The value of the .ie domain, it is something that when I'm talking about cybersecurity for people who are shopping online and so on, I'll always say to look out if it's a .ie address. And there are certain tips and tricks you can do to verify if a website is legitimate or not. Can you just tell me about the power of the .ie versus the .com or the .co.uk or the other dots that are out there?
Well, the big difference is really around how secure and how safe the .ie namespace is compared to, say, .com. And that security safety comes from how we manage ourselves and how we manage the registry. So first and foremost, when somebody applies for a name, we ask them for their connection to Ireland, and then we verify their identity. So with the company, we're confirming that they are who they say they are in the company's registration office. And if it's an individual looking to register their .ie, we're asking for a driver's license, passport, something that are utility bill. So that's the first thing we do. We're confirming who's behind the website or email address so the consumers don't have to worry. That's a good step. And then secondly, we employed a company called Netcraft, and they do continuous monitoring on the entire namespace. And they're tasked with looking for tech abuse. So that would be phishing, malware that's on .ie websites. And what they do then is bring it to the attention of the registrar or the hosting provider and to the owner of the domain. So between them, then they can work out a fix. And that's very useful because a small firm, let's say a small solicitor's firm, may not realize that somebody has interfered with their website and is capturing their client's data. So that firm of solicitors would be alerted with the Netcraft service, and now they can fix the phishing event on the website. And then the third thing we have, which is really important, and that's to cut down on potential criminality in the namespace as well. So we have protocols with regulators and agencies that if something comes across their desk that's a problem on a .ie, they can work with our hosting providers to help address the issue. Now, that doesn't mean take down the name or suspend it, but might be something as simple as taking content away down from the web pages themselves that are problematic. So if you think of the medicines regulator, or a good one is the central bank, if somebody is offering loans that shouldn't be, then that's prohibited. Central bank would say cease and desist. So they would work with us to find out who's behind that website, and then engage with them to make sure that they stop offering loans, et cetera, that they're not authorized by the central bank to do. A lot of those, just the we can work things out, or at least the registrant can work things out with the regulator, and they can, if it's an error, they can fix the error and then the site stays up. But if it's proven to be a breach of regulations, if they don't rectify the breach, then unfortunately that domain would be suspended and then eventually deleted. So there's three ways that .ie is actually safer and more secure than .com, where any domain you want, if it's available, you can just register it and you're up and running in no time to do what you want to do.
And it's great to hear, the advancements and that interconnectivity, I suppose, between different bodies to ensure that the consumer remains safe when they're shopping online. I'm looking through your the report that you that was published earlier the week. It's the Profile Report of 2024, and I'm just wondering if I suppose there is an urban-rural divide when it comes to businesses that are investing in not only their domain names, but their website presence as a whole. Is it possible to get a breakdown from a geographical point of view? Like again, did COVID see or cause a bit of an influx for people to register, particularly those who wouldn't have the footfall because perhaps they're more remote?
So we actually have a couple of stories that I would call stories in your question. And the first one is that if we look at the installed base of domain names, we can see that it's still predominantly Dublin, Cork, Galway, Limerick. So in the installed base, they account for 60% of the entire database. So let's call that their historical strength. And then there's another story that if we look at the new registrations, we see a very definite trend that the take-up of new domains is very much in the regions. And we actually see a slight decline in the main cities. So for instance, this time around, it was, let's call it the hinterland of Dublin. So we saw big growth in Meath, in Kildare, in Laois, counties that surround Dublin. So you would say, what's going on there? Is that people working from home? Perhaps there's a gig economy from home, perhaps there's some other artisan type activity, and they're setting up their websites in areas now where where they live. We also see a cluster this time in Munster, so Clare, Limerick, and Tipperary, actually, especially, where with new registrations, they're the ones that are topping the league table, if you like. 2 years ago, it was very much Galway, Sligo, Mayo. They were the ones who saw that little mini surge. So that's interesting, I think, because it tells you that the interest in digital is moving out beyond the urban areas into more, let's say, rural counties. And I say that with all due respect, that there are clusters of industry now setting up in areas outside the main cities. So previously there was a digital divide, very pronounced, and we see indications that it has started to narrow. And I say digital divide because when people register a domain name, what they're effectively saying is that's their digital intention. They're going to do something online. So registrations are a good forward indicator of digital intention. And it's always interesting to look in 6 months, 9 months, 12 months later to investigate, did that intention come to something? And sadly, very often it doesn't, and you find that the renewal date, they just don't renew. So now the domain is deleted. You see others then that set up a basic website, and really it's just a picture postcard website and it stays that way. But then, great from our point of view, we see those who invest in the website and they really make it their prime real estate online. And you know that because you can see the tools that they're using, the plugins, how they're making their website more sophisticated, and that they really are using it for customer acquisition, customer engagement, and then selling online. So we get eyes on that kind of progression on clusters of domains as they begin life with an intention and then come through to a sophisticated online presence.
And as we talk now in 2025, is there still room for growth in terms of .ie registrations? And do you think there's an appetite? We know that, I suppose, businesses are no longer local businesses anymore because, thanks to logistics companies, the world is a much smaller place. So, is there the appetite and is it still an attractive proposition to go for the .ie for the reasons that you outlined at the top?
I would say yes, there is still headroom for growth for .ie and for websites generally. I know that it's more popular to think that social media and social commerce is the way forward. And I think social media now has a role, don't get me wrong. It's great to drive traffic to a secure website, but I think it's really important that an SME business owner has control over their own e-commerce channel. And they shouldn't be reliant on third-party, selling platforms where the algorithms decide where the traffic goes. So I'd say have both. Have social media to get the customer's interest, but direct them then to your website where you're able to control your message, control your product, deal with any fake news, for instance, that might be out there on social. So definitely a role for both. But I would say do invest in a website. It's money well spent. You'll be building potentially a 24/7 salesperson. What would you pay on a salesman's salary? And think about that and say, look, would I put that into a website? That would be my main communication tool that would help me with leads, that would help me with bookings, that would help me with getting the right messages and offers out to customers.
My final question is around, I suppose, the education piece. Is enough being done to engage with the smaller businesses around this country to teach them not only the difference between, buying a domain name and hosting a website and creating a website and then getting eyeballs of customers on it? Like, do we still have work to do in that regard, particularly for the smaller businesses?
Absolutely, you've put it really well there. There is a huge amount of work to do in studies that we have done. We're doing a program with DCU, Dublin City University, and it's funded by the Department of Rural and Community Development. And that's showing that a lot of our small towns, the businesses there don't have websites at all. They're using social media, but they don't have websites at all. And the ones that do have websites, they're not sophisticated. So there's evidence, hard evidence, that more work is needed. And in fact, in our pre-budget submission, we recommended that the surplus on the National Training Fund should be used specifically to help small business to upskill. And there's two components to that. One is teach their staff how to do digital, because let's face it, if business owners are older, with all due respect, I'm an older person myself, you're less inclined to handle new apps, new technologies, new tools, and so on. But your staff are using them privately. They're making videos, they're uploading them, they're engaging on social. It's second nature to them. So upskill them on using the tools, the tech, the apps and the tools that are suitable for business. And I think that the unspent surplus, it's almost 2 billion euro, that surplus could be dedicated to helping SMEs, staff to use those tools to help the business boost their sales, increase their marketing, and improve their productivity.
Look, I do think, and I hope that, that investment does happen. And I do think there's still an opportunity to engage with people who might be that bit older, just to give them the skills and empower them. Because having played around with a bit of this myself, I know it's not rocket science. It just takes the patience, and it takes a patient person to engage and teach. But the rewards that it offers, particularly for whether they're self-employed or small businesses, are incredible. So fingers crossed that does happen. If you are a small business and you think this would be beneficial, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. But for the moment, David Curtin, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thank you very much, Jez. It was a pleasure.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
In life, there are memories that will never leave us.
I like you very much, just as you are.
But sometimes those memories are suddenly...
Bridget!
All we're left with.
Bridget, you're a widow with two wonderful children. My advice to you is put your own oxygen mask on first.
Yeah, there is just a taster of the new Bridget Jones movie. It's Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy. I went to see it with Andrea Gilligan on Thursday of this week. And I don't know why, it might be the most random thing in the world, but I have such a soft spot for the Bridget Jones movies. And I absolutely loved this one. So if you're looking for something to see in the cinema over the next wee while, and you're a fan of that sort of thing, I would highly recommend it. It is just incredibly joyous. It made me laugh, it made me cry. Yeah, you'll walk out of the cinema very happy. Some of the other recommendations I mentioned on the show that I've been struggling to read over the last wee while, I got my mojo back. I am reading two books at the moment. I always like to have, a non-fiction and then a good bit of fiction on the go. So my non-fiction at the moment is The Let Them Theory by Mel Robbins. Now, I know that Mel Robbins will not be everybody's cup of tea, but she just keeps popping up on my Instagram feed. And I bought the book the other day, and I am enjoying it. And I feel somewhat embarrassed about saying that, because sometimes these self-help books can be a bit eye-rolly. But I have taken something from it. I have found it beneficial. I also know there's a bit of controversy about Mel Robbins saying she coined the phrase "let them." I know that there's a poem, but Mel Robbins is out there telling everyone to let them, but then also let me. So if you're struggling to, I suppose, not care about a million different things in a day, it's definitely worth a read. I found it useful. The other book that I'm reading is called Anxious People. Now, it might be funny hearing that alongside the Let Them Theory, but it is by Frederick Backman, who wrote one of my all-time favourite fiction series, Beartown. If you've not read Beartown and the subsequent books, absolutely get in on that. But Anxious People is excellent. It's very funny, very witty and dry, but utterly readable. So if you've been in a bit of a funk like me when it comes to your reading, pick that up. You won't regret it. I absolutely love it. A few people have been on to me with other book suggestions, and I'm going to run through some of them now because, as I said, I was in a bit of a funk when it came to reading, and I definitely wasn't the only one. So let's just see here now some of the other books. Demon Copperhead Barbara Kingsolver, it's brilliant, says Gillian. Stacey said, before the coffee gets cold. Somebody else, Porrick, said, recently read Crash by J.G. Ballard. Highly recommend. Candy Fitz, 32, on Instagram said, just finished Graham Norton's latest Frankie, It's Only Okay. That's interesting. I know some people who absolutely love all of the Graham Norton books. I haven't read the latest one now, but that is interesting. Now, this is the one that I wanted to tell you about. Magella Tiernan said to me, all of the Slow Horses books by Mick Herron are addictive. So that, I think, is going to be my next jump in point to a bit of fiction. I am a big fan of the TV show. I've mentioned it numerous times here on the programme on Apple TV. So I will definitely give that a go. But let me know, what are you reading at the moment? What are you watching? I'm always on the hunt for something good. Techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. Right, we have a bit of time to jump into the inbox and answer some of your tech questions. Let me have a quick look here now. First up, we have an email from someone whose name I'm not going to read out because it says, hi Jess, I have dyslexia. My hearing is not the best. Could you help me please? My job requires me to take minutes at meetings sometimes. I don't want to tell them I have dyslexia. Is there something I can get from my laptop that can dictate and write? So yes, there is. There are so many apps out there now that are ideal for these scenarios. So if the meetings that you have to take the minutes for are virtual meetings, and if they happen either via Teams or via Zoom, there's the functionality built in now to transcribe the text of a meeting. And it does it in real time, and then you can download it and you'll have it. I use it sometimes for interviews. So if I'm doing something for, say, the Business Post, I'll record an interview and then I will turn on that feature on Zoom and transcribe it. It is very beneficial. You can also do it within a Word doc. So again, if you're at a physical meeting, you can turn on the transcribe feature. It is very, very beneficial. Also, the speech detection is great. I also use, and I mentioned this, I think, a little while ago, I have the Google Pixel 9 Pro is the phone that I use. And on that, on the phone itself, there is a voice recorder, and it's just called recorder. And when I record an interview or a conversation or whatever it might be, obviously I tell people that I'm recording, but the app can transcribe in real time. So again, the speech detection is very good. It does need to be tidied up sometimes, just in terms of perhaps names or place names and so on. So like you'd need to go through and double check. But also then to help with the dyslexia side of things, you could get something like Grammarly and have that as a plugin on your browser, on your computer. And it'll absolutely help. There are so many different helps out there for people with dyslexia now, but that they would be the ones that I would recommend. If there's any other suggestions that you would have for this person, please do email techtalk@newstalk.com and I will pass it on. There are advancements, but they're only good if you know what they are and where to find them. Next up, we have a question here from Selena, who says, hi, my name is Selena. I'm interested in buying the Whoop. Can you tell me where I can buy one and how much it costs? You buy it from whoop.com. So if you go to the website and you hit join, you have the options there in terms of the membership price points. You can also pick and customize your Whoop bands that you may want. And there's also a month free. So if you sign up for the month trial, if you don't like it, you just send the band back and then you don't use it again. But as I said last week on the show, I personally, my personal experience is that I've got quite a bit from it. I have found that I'm sleeping much better. I'm moving more, but I'm also listening to my body more. You can listen back to the full chat with Brian on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. It's like one or two people were asking why it's so expensive, which I do think is a fair question. But my thinking of it is, so it's 264 quid for the annual membership, right? That's 22 quid a month. I have been able, and I don't take this for granted, and this is just my situation, but that to me is a few coffees a month. It's also cheaper than a gym membership. I joined a gym, hated it, didn't go back. So it works for me. I have found the benefit from it. It's not going to suit everyone. Brian did say that on the show last week. But if you want to give it a go, the fact that it is, there's that 1 month free trial, it's worth having a go. And then the worst case scenario is you don't get anything from it and you send it back. But yeah, if you've any questions about the Whoop, or if you've got any personal stories or anecdotes to share, please do drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. That's it from me this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. I'm going to be back with Shane and Kira on Monday's Newstalk Breakfast. But in the meantime, have a great weekend.